on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Tuesday, February 17th, 2026 edition of Invest Talk. Hope everyone had a wonderful holiday weekend, and we are ready to go for another shortened week, but an important week nonetheless. We're still in the midst of earnings season, so we're getting a lot of that coming in, and new data from the economy that continues to shed more and more light on where we are headed. So we're going to dig into all of this and much, much more throughout this hour, and this hour is dedicated to you and whatever's on your mind. So don't hesitate to reach out with your questions at 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. And we're going to mix in some educational and actionable material to help you become a better investor. But as usual, we're going to pivot over to our first caller question. And then after, we'll hit on the market performance and run down the show topics.
Hi, Justin or Luke. I was wondering if you could take a look at ticker symbol THC, Tenet Healthcare. I'm looking at some more exposure to the healthcare sector. I don't have much right now. So you could take a look at the numbers and let me know if you think it is a good company. And if it pulled back to a certain price, you can think it would be a good buy. Thank you very much. Have a good day. Bye.
Are looking at THC, and this is in the healthcare space, which has been improving as of late because, frankly, the worries of cuts to Medicare and cuts to drug prices and all of that just really hasn't come to fruition since this new administration has taken the White House in the past year plus. And so overall, the healthcare space is doing well, and you have an aging population. And now that's why this is getting a bounce back. Last quarter, revenues were up 9%, but earnings were up 37%. So overall, this new administration has been good for the healthcare companies. Free cash flow is reaccelerating to the upside throughout the last year for Tenet, and they have a decent balance sheet. Return equity at 27%, very strong return equity, really strong profitability. And that's kind of where it's been since the pandemic. It's been kind of in that high 20s return equity level. And as I said, with an aging demographic, that certainly helps the company. Enterprise value to EBITDA right around 8, which is kind of in the middle of its long-term range. So even after the rally, which the April lows was trading, at $110 per share roughly, now we're at $234 per share. So despite that move, it's still fairly valued historically. So I like the momentum. I like the trends. It's certainly not cheap, but it's not expensive either. And so if you're looking for a healthcare play, I think this is probably one of those good ones. So I would give Tenet Healthcare a thumbs up. Fairly attractive at these prices. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and here's what we have planned. Our main focus point concerns semiconductors and the custom chip war. It's not just about NVIDIA, but we'll talk about custom silicon and how that helps is being designed distinctly for AI models and AI processes. So we'll dig into that story. In addition, we have other topics on the docket. One of the big pieces of news over the past month or so was existing home sales. It fell pretty considerably in December and in January. So we're going to talk about those numbers and give you an update on what that means for the broader housing market. We also want to dig into private equity. This is going to be one of the biggest stories over the next 5 years or so. It's how will these investors get out? And it's frankly not just about your mom and pop investor. It's about endowments. It's about insurance companies. And frankly, the endowments are the ones that are having the biggest issues after they had been the biggest backers of private equity and private credit. But now they're starting to regret their decision. So we'll look at the numbers there. And then lastly, if we have time, Micron is spending $200 billion to expand capacity of memory chip production. So we'll talk about that and what that means for that industry as a whole, because if you go look at Micron stock or SanDisk stock or a lot of the memory makers stocks, they're sky high. And the question is, how long can that be sustained? And hint, hint, there's a lot to be gleaned from this article or this topic that we'll get into a little later. We also have voice bank calls, and one is on how to roll over a 401k, as well as BBVA. It's a Brazilian bank. It's a Spanish bank. We'll dig into that. And then we have some questions that came in via the comment section over the Invest Talk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now. Your live calls will always be number one. So if you call that number live 4 to 5 Pacific time, whether you're listening on live stream on our website or maybe on AM 1220, either way, we will get to you. You will get to the front of the line. So we're going to head into a break, and I welcome your finance and investment questions right now. So once again, call Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART.
When you tell your friends about Invest Talk and they ask you why you listen, let them know there are many reasons, and one is parallel investing from KPP Financial and Invest Talk host Justin Klein. Parallel investing means Justin invests right alongside KPP Financial clients. He makes the same trade for KPP Financial on the same day, at the same price, and the same percentages as KPP clients. There's no front running and no special treatment. In this way, Justin and KPP Financial share the same risks and the same potential for success. Parallel investing aligns the interests of Justin and KPP Financial with those of his clients. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your questions about parallel investing. And you can learn more anytime at investtalk.com. Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your calls live. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
We're going to go take a live call. Mike is calling with a question from Utah.
Yeah, I was just calling on the CMCLF. It's CMOC Group LTD, and it's a mining company, but it's not based in the U.S. And I know you're strong again on getting diversified outside of the U.S. And it seems like a strong company. I'm just curious why it's so cheap. And I know over the counter is they have fees when you buy them, but is there anything else I should be aware of that steer me away from an over the counter OTC or?
Well, the regulations around reporting are a lot lighter. So that is one potential big issue. And this is a name that comes out of China. That's where it's headquartered.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. Let me see where its mines are. Let me pull up that data.
Africa. You know? They're Africa. In Africa. Okay. I'm pretty sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's a certain level of jurisdictional risk that you have to be comfortable with. Okay. Because especially in Africa, there's some countries are a lot more stable than others and their rule of law is better than others. Okay. So 54% of the revenue from this company though comes from mainland China, 10% Singapore, 5% South Korea, et cetera. That's at least where maybe the companies that are buying their gold. And so this is a gold miner, correct?
I thought it was lithium. It's multiple.
Copper and gold,
lithium,
yeah.
Cobalt.
Yeah, cobalt. It's a mix of them. Yeah, let me see here. 88% are coal and metals, 20% copper. Yeah, cobalt's only 4%, not too much. I'd like to dig in. A lot of this looks like coal and metal distribution. Okay, so that looks like it's more of a middleman than a pure miner, because they manufacture, market, and explore mainly copper. Yeah, copper is their main output, but then they make money off of distributing that as well. Okay, so it's not a pure play in that sense. Once again, it's also out of China. So what are the controls around the honesty of their numbers? So that's why it probably trades at a bit of a discount. Now, if I'm looking at it, it's actually not that cheap, to be honest with you. 12 times enterprise value to EBITDA. You know, if you go over to like, let's look at the one that we own for clients, that is Southern Copper. So more of a pure play copper miner. So that is a bit more expensive. That's closer to 20 times enterprise value EBITDA. So I understand, you know, it might be a bit cheaper, but, you know, it's that jurisdictional risk that definitely has me a bit worried. So I like foreign exposure, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a foreign listed company. It can be a domestic company or a company that's listed on a domestic exchange, but, you know, maybe has an ADR, for example, or maybe is headquartered in the United States, but has its properties outside of the United States. That happens a lot with the material stocks, copper miners, gold miners, et cetera. So,
that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. So I don't know if I love this one. It's already moved pretty considerably. You know, I think you kind of missed the boat in some way. On this. Now, if it comes back in sub $2, maybe that gets a little more attractive. But ultimately, you know, there's a lot of risk there. It's also pretty illiquid, doesn't trade very many shares. Let me look at the average. Have you tried to buy it?
Yeah. And they just charge you a fee of like.
Yeah. And that's most OTC. So. Yeah. Most OTC. But then what is the spread as well? So you might pay a lot to, you know, and it doesn't sound like a lot, it might be 5 cent spread, but on a $2.94 stock, 5 cents is pretty considerable. That's almost a 2% spread, right? So I'd be curious to see how liquid it is because of that OTC nature and that it's Chinese. It's not a small company, $63 billion market cap, free cash flow around $3.7 billion, cash from operations about $4.5 billion. So things are going well for the name. I just worry about those numbers and how true they are. And then obviously the liquidity as well. So I like that you're looking abroad and I like the space that you're looking in, but this probably wouldn't be the name that I hitch my ride to.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you, Justin. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So I get through and ask your question on today's show. Now let's take a look at the market today. And it was another one of those kind of mixed bag days overall. Yes, the broader indices were higher. The Dow was up 32 points, 49,500 and change. S&P up 7 points, 0.1%. NASDAQ was up 31 points, 14 basis points there. And it was a mixed bag. You had Microsoft and Google down, some bigger tech names struggling. Tesla down about 1.5%. Oracle down nearly 4%. Salesforce, you continue to see weakness in a lot of the software stocks from CrowdStrike and AppLovin and Synopsys, Intuit, Oracle, like I said, IBM, Palo Alto Networks. These are all names that were down. And that's where a lot of the weakness in tech was concentrated. Apple up 3%, NVIDIA up 1%. And a lot in finance kind of bounced back. That was a nice positive. Not a whole lot of red on that side. You did see oil pull back a little bit. Chevron and Exxon down about 1.5% on the day. Consumer staples pulled back a little bit with Philip Morris and Pepsi down over 2% on the day. So really kind of a mixed bag. Even though the broader indices were green, you did have the Empire State Manufacturing Index come in at 7.1 positive. Consensus was 10.1. So it missed that. January's reading was 7.7. So some deceleration from there. And it's still positive. That is good. But ADP private payroll showed an average of only 10,000 growth over the past 4 months, a third straight increase, which is good, but it's still at a very, very low level. So the labor market is strengthening a little bit, but still overall relatively weak. So a mixed bag as we continue through earnings season. Now we're heading to a break. I welcome your finance and investment questions right now. No question is too simple or too complex. You set the agenda. So give us a call on InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART.
The calls are free. The unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Justin and Luke. This is Miguel calling from Lake Forest, California. I have a question about a stock that I own for about 3 years already. The ticker symbol is Bravo, Bravo, Victor Alpha, Banco Bilbao, Vizcaya Argentaria. I would like to know your honest opinion about this company. I see that finances are starting to roll over, but at the same time, I see this company has increased their dividend since 2024. And also, I see that they announced a share buyback program happening until from 2025, December, all the way to 2028. So I just would like to see what your input is about this company, and I will listen in the podcast. Thank you so much for all you do. Bye-bye.
All right, looking at BBVA, you might see BBVA Compass, but the parent bank is Banco Bilbao out of Spain. Now, this is goes back to know what you own. While they are headquartered in Spain, and about a quarter of their revenue comes from Spain, about 42% of their revenue actually comes from Mexico. So this is mostly a Mexican bank, or at least tied to the Mexican economy. They do have exposure to Turkey, Brazil as well, Argentina, here in the United States, Colombia, and Chile. And those are kind of their main revenue sources. But effectively, it's a nearly 70% of their business comes from Mexico and Spain. Earnings are up 14% expected this year, 11% next year. And we actually own this for clients. We've owned it for some time. Now, it's pulled back a little bit. We did trim it recently around $25 per share. Now it's at $23.11. So, you know, it's run since we bought it, and it probably needs a bit of a cooling off period, but we still really like it. Now, if it gets back around $20 per share, love to buy it there, around maybe around the 200-day moving average. That's probably where it'd be more aggressive to pick up for new clients. So it does probably need a bit of cooling off, but we like the exposure to the Mexican economy. Like you said, they're buying back shares. Their earnings last quarter were up 26% with revenues up 16%, nice 2.9% dividend yield. And while that dividend has been going up, it's gone up in a choppy fashion, which is not unusual. What's good about this is that it does pay a dividend three times a year, which for, actually, let me see. Nope, I lied. It's twice a year, April and November. So like most foreign companies, it doesn't pay quarterly, it pays semi-annually. So be aware of that. But return equity, 18%. And overall, it's just a very well-run bank tied to economies that are growing. And the European economy is starting to grow again as well. So we really like this foreign exposure, foreign bank, well-run, good balance sheet. And yeah, we're going to give BBVA a thumbs up. Now, let's tackle a YouTube comment question. Corey Durbin says, Justin or Luke, thank you for the show and all you do for the investor community. Your recent video covered cybersecurity investing. What are your thoughts on company Cloudflare, NET? Is it a good investment at current prices? Now, Cloudflare, they develop software for firewall routing, traffic optimization, load balancing, and other network services. Problem is that their earnings this year are only supposed to be $1.12 and then $1.42 next year. And that is a low amount for a company that currently trades for $193.07. Price to sales is 31. 31. That is egregious. That's the only way you can really, that's the only thing you can really say. Now, the gross profit margins are 74%, but the return on equity is negative. The free cash flow is nice at about $300 million, but the market cap is $68 billion. So you're talking about a price to free cash flow at 208. That is, once again, egregious. So it's a company that is growing nicely, revenue growth up 30% year over year, but it is in the software space. I'll be interested to see, will there be any AI tools that potentially usurp what Cloudflare does for networks? It wouldn't shock me. And that means there's a lot more potential. Even if Cloudflare still has its hold on its place in the network, I still think it is way, way, way too expensive. So no, I would not own this. And technically, the trend is down. It peaked back in October, like the rest of the tech market. And it's already down. Let's see. It's down 25% from its 52-week high. This is the type of name that will probably fall 80% from its high at some point, which means this is a sub $100 stock, probably a sub $50 stock. So I wouldn't even think about touching it until $100. And frankly, 50 is probably the area that I would start to maybe entertain it being a reasonable value. Now we're moving into a break, still to come, my focus point, and more answers to your questions. So I encourage you to call me right now on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART.
Justin Klein is here and ready to tackle your questions.
Curious if you think it'd be better for me to let it go and spend money elsewhere.
Well, first off, never take one man's opinion as gospel, including my own.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
When you give a recommendation on your show for a buy-in, like an entry point to buy a stock, if I already own it, should I go ahead and be looking to sell it?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Justin Klein is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my focus point today concerns this story. Semiconductors, the custom chip war. And it's not just about NVIDIA. It's about a lot of the chip names that are filling different needs within the AI stack. Now, global revenues are projected to reach $30 billion this year in the chip industry. And really, it's being driven by demand for efficient and powerful AI solutions for particular industries, especially healthcare, finance, manufacturing. And as more and more devices are requiring AI capabilities, the demand for specialized chips to handle these complex tasks increases. Now, one issue a lot of the chip producers are running into is just technical skills for AI chip development. That's why any engineer that can work and develop these chips are making gobs and gobs of money and stock options, et cetera. And companies are investing heavily in R&D to create chips for specific applications. And it's not, once again, it's not just NVIDIA. It's the Intels of the world, even the Googles of the world. They're releasing their own AI-focused chips. Now, what are the most in-demand chips? They're called ASICs. Application-specific integrated circuits. So it's not just about GPUs. ASICs provide better performance for specific tasks. Now, they're only for specific functions. So once that's established, it's not as flexible as a GPU, for example. But still, the demand for these type of chips is rising considerably. And those that can make them are gaining market share fast. Last year, ASIC-based AI chips reached 40% market share. So you might have heard of what are called tensor processing units. That's what Google makes. That's what helps them actually run their models more efficiently. That is one type of ASIC. And then there are specific use cases for particular types of chips, such as LiDAR. Have you ever seen a Waymo? That's the argument around full self-driving with Tesla cars, is that they don't have LiDAR. They don't have these chips. And LiDAR stands for light detection and ranging. And you need specific chips for that, that can do those complex calculations. And all, and this along with radar and heads-up displays, et cetera, these are all used to integrate into the systems on vehicles for full self-driving or AI type applications. And then there's AI, what's called on the edge, meaning on the phone. And I think this is where the industry will head eventually. And uniquely, Apple is underappreciated in this realm, that the M series chips that are have historically been some of the best performing chips out there that they make themselves are set up for running AI applications on device, which if more and more of that happens, well, these data centers may become less and less relevant. And I think that's one of the biggest risks for the huge CapEx spend from the hyperscalers, is that the models get more efficient, such as like a DeepSeek, for example, and now they can be run on device as opposed to having to query a data center, run that, and then report back like you normally do here with an LLM, you know, a ChatGPT, a Gemini, etc. And then there's the chips that manage the energy, predicting energy demand, adjusting power distribution accordingly, optimizing power usage. All of this can be done by AI, but specific chips that are designed for those needs. And I think this is the future, because everyone focuses on AI as a chatbot, but frankly, there are a lot of different verticals here that AI can be utilized for with the right hardware and the right models. And increasingly, specific tech stacks for these verticals will become very profitable. There'll be economic moats around that, meaning that certain chip companies will be good at producing chips for that particular vertical. And that's going to be a huge win for those names, especially when they pay for themselves, if they are streamlining operations, reducing costs of data centers, for example, improving uptime, and able to adapt to the landscape of what's needed. So all of this is where AI is headed, and that's why the chip names are actually doing better than the software names. Because increasingly, it's going to be about the compute capacity, not just an aggregate, meaning, you know, how many ChatGPT queries can be ran, but other data inputs that are more specific to different verticals and different industries. And so when you're looking to invest in AI, you want to be following the chip names. How well are they becoming established in these different verticals? Names like AMD, Broadcom, Google, Intel, IBM, Meta, Microchip Technologies, NVIDIA, obviously, but NXP Semiconductors, Qualcomm, Samsung, TSMC, etc. These are all names that have thrown their hat in the ring and are big players. And some of these are going to come out crushing it. Others, not so much. So this is the sandbox that you actually want to be playing in, along with the other bottlenecks of capacity, which are copper, uranium for energy production, natural gas for energy production, wiring, HVAC, all the things that go into the data centers, but also eventually all the things that may not need a data center might be on chip. And I think you have to increasingly be aware of the advances on that side. Let's keep things moving and drop in another listener question from 888-99-CHART.
This is Ben from Orlando. I know this question has been asked and answered before, but I could use a refresher. I have a Roth 401k through my employer, and in the event of leaving my employer, can you explain the steps of how to roll over your 401k? And I believe there was a certain verbiage you said to use that would ensure that you are not penalized when doing so. I'll listen on the show. Thanks.
Well, it's very, very simple. Now, if you have a Roth 401k, you're going to go open up a Roth IRA at any of the big brokers from Schwab, Fidelity, E-Trade, etc. I wouldn't recommend Robinhood, but one of the big ones. And then you're going to call your provider and you're going to say, hey, I want to do a rollover of my 401k. And then they're going to sell all the positions in there. They're going to issue you a check and you have 60 days to get that into that new Roth IRA, or if it's a traditional 401k, you want to roll that into a traditional IRA. You have 60 days to do that. Otherwise, that's when you get penalized. It acts as income for you for that year. So it's very straightforward, very simple. We do this all the time for our clients. And yeah, as long as you get it within 60 days, you shouldn't be penalized. Now let's play another listener question now.
Hey guys, I wanted to get your opinion on Dollar General. And then now would be a good time to buy. Just wanted to get your thoughts. Thanks.
All right, looking at Dollar General, DG is the symbol. And this is a name that's been doing well as of late. The whole dollar space has been doing well. And we looked at this compared to Dollar Tree. They're kind of the two leaders within the space. And we like both of them. Now, we ended up buying Dollar Tree over Dollar General, but it was honestly splitting hairs. It was they're very similar in their profitability, balance sheet, market trends, obviously, because they cater to the same demographic. Dollar Tree, if I remember correctly, is a little bit smaller than Dollar General, and they are breaking the buck more, meaning they're selling more than just dollar items. You remember, it used to be the dollar store. Well, now it's more like sub $5. For a lot of items. So overall, I like both of them. You can go wrong with either. You know, Dollar General, a lot of people like Dollar General because it pays a dividend. Yeah, if you want a dividend, well, then Dollar General is your horse. Dollar Tree, we didn't care about the dividend. It doesn't pay a dividend, but obviously still very profitable, good growth, very well run. So I like both of them. Just a matter of which one you like better. Let's go answer a YouTube question. It says, you've mentioned several times recently that Google appears to be leading AI, at least in the near term. Given that the stock performance has been relatively soft lately, do you think this presents a good entry opportunity? If possible, could you share your thoughts on a reasonable entry price? Yeah. You know, Google basically since the fall has been the leader within the Mag 7 names within the AI space. That has pulled back along with kind of all of software, to be frank. And while Google still, I think, is the leader within its ecosystem, its LLMs, there's others that are just continuing to come out with good products as well that I think it's going to fight back and forth with who has the best model. I mean, you have DeepSeek with China. That's improving. A lot of open source models will be good. But really, once again, I think it's about the ecosystem. And can you have the ecosystem to share data and what is called context prompting? And so context is really giving an understanding of who you are, if you're a business, what business you are, how many employees you have, what does your business look like, what's struggling, what's doing well, and then having it improve your operations. And I think that's where Google has the leg up right now. Because you're able to put everything in Google Cloud, you have all the other verticals like the Google Drive, like I said, sorry, and then you have Sheets, and you have all the word processing, everything that goes around the Google Cloud and their tools, and Notebook LM, which we think is a great tool as well. So we like Google, and we think it's winning right now, but that doesn't mean that it isn't without risks. Understand that. Now, where is, and honestly, the biggest driver of its moat right now is actually not that the LLM is the best. It's actually that their TPUs are allowing them to run their models at a lower cost, a much lower cost than a ChatGPT, for example. So they have to put less money in to support their business, their AI business. And so that's why, you know, we think it's the winner as of now. Now, where is the buy point? Well, I will say it's at support today. It's right at the 100-day moving average. It's at the 2.5 retrace from the lows in April of last year. So there is some support here. Now, better support, we'd be down around 269, 270. Currently, we're trading around 300. So, you know, is there another 10% down from here? Definitely. If the market falls out of bed because of its weight in the broader indices, it's going to come down with it as well. So that's probably where it'd be aggressive to pick it up, is right around 270. Let's talk about housing real quick. And, you know, the housing market had a rough January. Month over month, I believe we were down, 7, 8, 9%, something like that, to 3.9 million units of existing homes sold. And this is a continuation of the same pattern that we saw in years past, where we had a soft winter so far. Now, active listings are growing, but at a slower pace. So you have less opportunities than you were seeing, or new opportunities at least, than you were seeing just a couple of months ago. And then you have a softening labor market. So people are less confident in what's going on in the broader economy and in, I think, the political environment. And but the trends do look different based on location. What's interesting is Florida inventory has started to slow its increase of new listings. But in the north, in places like the northeast, you're actually seeing inventory starting to rise, which hadn't before. At a state level, home listings were up most for Maryland, Maine, and Washington, but they were still up on every state except for Alaska and North Dakota. So listings continue to rise. The housing market continues to be weak, but I don't think it's hell in a handbasket. I just think it's a new step lower, and I think the housing market will continue to struggle through this year. This is InvestDoc. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. So give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to Bill in Northern California, looking at EQIX.
Hi, yeah, hi, Justin. Hey, you getting a lot of rain down there, like we are up here in the north?
Yeah, we got a good amount over the weekend, but I think it stopped earlier today.
We're over 5 inches in the last 3 or 4 days.
We'll stay dry up there.
But anyway, yeah, thanks. So, I have some shares of Equinix. I've held it and sold it a couple of times at least, but I've had it now for like a year to almost 2 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I sold it before, I just thought it was getting overvalued. And last year, you know, they missed or something, and I think it was May, and it went down like $100 in a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And so I've just wondering after this recent, you know, jump up.
Is it time to sell?
You see it as, you know, or part of the position at least. You know, how do you see it? I like
that's
a really good growing dividend. That's one thing I find very appealing about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's growing. For everyone else out there, Equinix is the largest third-party data center provider worldwide. And so, you know, they have what a lot of hyperscalers are trying to do, they've been doing for many years, which is, you know, find locations, build outs, and expand data centers. And so they have a lot of experience. They're first mover advantage in that sense. And so a lot of times when they, you know, the AI companies don't have the capacity themselves, they'll go rent space out at an Equinix type data center for their AI workflows. And so the demand is very high because a lot of other companies are capacity constrained. They can't find, remember, if you're building out a data center and you one thing is missing, well, the whole thing doesn't work. Whether that's HVAC, whether that's energy, whatever it is, you need it all. And in a lot of cases, there's been data centers that are built that just don't have the energy to put in, right? Meaning they can't connect to the grid. They don't have that capacity. And so some of them are buying, you know, Bloom Energy devices. They're finding other ways to power them. But in some cases, maybe they ran out of funding or whatever. So the issue here is a lot of physical capacity constraints. So I think in the near term, they're going to continue to do well. Now, the worry is that at some point, do they catch up? At some point, do these models become more efficient where they don't need as much capacity? Think a DeepSeek type of situation. Or do more and more models able to be ran on device, on your iPhone, on your Android? That's another question as well, like I talked about before. So I think there's a lot of risk in the medium to long term. In the short term, I don't see things evolving that fast to where their business is going to turn. You know, because their guidance was good, their earnings were fairly good. Now, the biggest issue is cash flow. They're always kind of growing. They're always putting more money into new capacity because the demand for data centers has continued to grow over the years. And so that's puts them in a good place right now, but will that always be the case? So I like what you're thinking of saying, hey, let's sell or trim a little bit into these moves, because it's not a name that's going to likely double over the next year or so. Okay, maybe it goes up a little bit more, but after this move, it's already moved from 725 back in December all the way up to 950 right now. For a REIT, that's what it is. It's a real estate investment trust, owns data centers. That is a big move. So yeah, this is the time I would trim.
Very good. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks for the call and stay dry up there in NorCal. Now I'm Justin Klein to remind you about KPP Financial's parallel investing. When we make a trade for our clients, I make the same trade for myself. Same day, same price, same percentage of the account. No front running, no special treatments. We invest right alongside our clients. So we share the same risk and potential for success. And you can learn more about it over at investtalk.com. Please tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes or Spotify, or watch our videos and posts your question on our YouTube channel. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.